We're here with Side Pocket and another wonderful group of people. Side Pocket, what are we talking about today?
Yes, things actually work here. finally. This personally, and I'm not kidding, is the one I've been excited for all day for. Like, no pressure, but like, I'm... Because Phone Losers of America, I used to Redbox as a kid. I'm very interested in telecommunications, both digitally and analog. Growing up, ever since I was about like eight, nine years old. So like, this makes me like really excited. We had two amazing talks back to back about open telecom networks, coming from two different angles, but sharing, I would assume, very similar tech and beliefs. And it's an honor and privilege of me to introduce Peter, Johnny, Yes, Johnny and Willow. Thank you for coming down here to Radio Statler. And before we go through, I would say, starting with Johnny, going around, how about we all introduce ourselves?
I'm Johnny Diggs. I'm the chief evangelist for a company called Tropo. Mm-hmm. I'm also founder of Geeks Without Bounds and a telecom geek. And I do all of our developer outreach for Tropo. So I travel around the world and talk to a lot of telecom developers. And
that sounds like hell.
It's just terrible. It's just terrible. Actually, I love talking to the geeks. It's the telecom executives that are a little bit more...
I know your pain.
It's kind of like calling customer service.
They're fun to social engineer, though. Okay, and this lovely lady here?
My name is Willow Brew. I am also with Geeks Without Bounds, and I wear a couple of academic hats as well. They let me show up and give me institutional credibility, which is crazy and strange still. And sometimes I write things and people read them. It's very strange.
And before we get to Peter, I want to add, because we don't have a webcam in here, what you're not seeing is Willow's awesome, amazing electric blue hair right now. We can't do over radio yet. Soon, next con.
It's pretty amazing.
And sort of her trademark.
Peter?
Hi, Peter Bloom. I am the general coordinator of Rizomatica. I live in Mexico. I'm originally from the U.S. And Rizomatica basically helps communities set up cell phone networks that they own.
Yeah. Awesome. Just for a little bit more background, like I said, we had the two between these three. Unfortunately, Maya. Maka couldn't make it because she had to go on a bus back home. Otherwise, we'd have four people. But we had two informative talks. I could really feel like the energy in both of those crowds for those talks. So just to give background for the lowly peons aren't here, starting with Peter, what was your talk about? Because you guys went on first.
Oh, I wish I'd wrote my notes. No, so...
You're that drunk already?
All the club mates.
Yes.
No, yeah, so I basically spoke about, you know, what we do, obviously, which is set up low-cost cell phone networks, and the sort of social and legal aspect of how we're able to do that without getting, you know, thrown into jail or deported or whatever. So that was the gist of what I spoke about. Would you like me to go into more detail?
Sure, just a little bit more, because what to me the main fascinating hook is that this is for, you know, we're so used to talking about stuff in the United States, but this is for the needs of not just Mexico, but rural Mexico and the impact on that.
Right, so in Mexico there's around 50,000 communities that are uncovered, that do not have cellular coverage and don't really have any other options for telephony. There's some good movement happening around the like community wireless or just regular wireless ISPs that are bringing internet into the mountains and into other areas. So those are partners of ours many times. But people don't necessarily have computers. Mm-hmm. So where we are in Oaxaca, something like 8% of the population owns
dedicated machine computers, I might add.
Yeah, you know, a computer.
Yeah.
Like a laptop, a desktop, whatever. Not a fancy cell phone that's also a computer. So there's way more of those that people have. If they're going to put their money into a consumer electronic device, it's going to be a cell phone. It's not going to be a laptop. It's not going to be a desktop.
Right.
So basically, I traveled to a lot of these communities doing low power FM stuff. And saw that all these people had cell phones and didn't have coverage.
Right.
And working on community FM kind of just gave me the idea. I said, what if we could do community cellular? And actually the work that my two companions here do at at Burning Man was actually a huge inspiration for what we do, to say, yes, it's possible technologically, and yes, it's possible to sort of, you know, right. shimmy it into the context in some way that can be helpful, that can actually meet the needs of people, rather than, mm-hmm. you know, dumping all this technological baggage onto people and saying, okay, you have a cell phone, so we'll be in charge of the network, right. we'll make it do this, we'll make it do that, but, you know, you don't really have any input, it's going to be expensive. So we try to avoid that,
right.
make it as inexpensive as humanly possible, which, you know, things could always be a little bit cheaper, but I feel like we're kind of scraping the right. lower end as much as possible. So, you know, using people's existing SIM cards, one DID number, so there's only one number right. that you use to call in.
And all that good stuff. Keep yeah. it local, but still keep it connected.
Exactly.
Before I ask a question to both of you guys, Johnny, did you want to comment on that? It seemed like you were really eager to.
I just wanted to clarify that, you know, while Willow and I have participated in the last couple of years with the Papa Legba crew at Burning Man,
right.
we didn't invent it. we joined the guys. They've been doing it for 6 years, mm-hmm. started by David Burgess and Harvin Samra from Range mm-hmm. Networks. They wrote OpenBTS, and so we piggybacked a lot off of them. So I just wanted to make sure that people didn't think that right. Willow and I were in charge of making that cell phone network go.
That's fine. I find it very commendable that you're willing to acknowledge the predecessors before you. And one of the things I always say is, because we've had comments like that from speakers coming in of like, you know, I did a lot of work, but we, you know, everything came from this, is that a lot of good purposeful hacking is raising the bar. Like
yeah.
that's kind of the theme of Hope every year. Every Hope we raise the bar on the inspiration and the projects that people want to do.
Yeah.
So on the other end of the spectrum of speaking of that, because I'm very curious, is that so with This Is Burning Man, when did you guys first do Burning Man, and how did you get involved with that project?
So the first time that I we started Geeks Without Bounds in 2010. We launched it on 10/10/10.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like the geekiest date we could think of, and in binary it translates
yes,
to 42.
42.
Which is the theory is that when Douglas Adams was writing about deep thought and the mm-hmm. answer to life, the universe, and everything, he was waffling back and forth 1 0 1 0.
Mm-hmm.
1 0.
So the first year, I guess it would have been 2011, which was Willow's first year at Burning Man. When we launched Geeks Without Bounds, we really kind of had a general idea of we wanted to sort of, you know, I don't want to say model, but, you know, take the Doctors Without Borders concept and apply it to technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so we traveled around the country, mostly visiting hackerspaces, and we would talk to them about digital humanitarianism. We didn't even really mm-hmm. know these terms at the time, but we would travel around and sort of engage them and talk about some ideas and then get feedback. And one of the I consistently kept saying, well, you should talk to people would say you should talk to the guys from OpenBTS,
right?
Because they set up
right,
this
right,
network
right, BTS people.
And so I actually first spoke with David, and he was on his way to Burning Man in 2011, and we had a phone call as he was on his way there, and it was the first time that he kind of explained what they were doing, and I was super excited, but I couldn't go that year.
Mm-hmm.
But I was determined that I was going to go the next year. We did actually have some of my coworkers from Tropel went,
mm-hmm.
And Willow went that year.
I didn't show up to their camp because Burning Man happened.
Enough said.
Which, yeah. So the next year, which would have been 2012, so I've been the last 2 years, mm-hmm. was my first experience, and in both setting up a cell phone network and understanding how a cell phone network worked. I thought I knew, but I didn't actually know until I got involved with putting towers together. And
what a pain in the ass it is.
Yes. So, and the conditions there and there's, you know, nothing of what Peter deals with, but there is politics,
mm-hmm.
and you've got people who don't like it,
yeah.
and you've got people that think it's really cool,
yeah.
and You got to find other people who have camps that are spread out that are willing to let you put up a tower.
I've always wanted to go to Burning Man myself. I have a lot of friends that go there, and it's like you have the people who are like almost Amish, then you have the people who are very interested in how, which a question I'm getting into later, that technology on the playa itself. Mm-hmm. You have the people of mutant vehicles freaking out. You have the people who just want to be naked and don't care. You know, you have all these different.
It's a melting pot.
Right.
And one of the things that I find really interesting and different between the two things that we're doing,
right,
even though they're in the same vein, is that if we go and set up at Burning Man and people don't like it, it's like, well, tough shit. Like, it's, we're here for a week, get over it. Whereas what you do is so incredible, but so time consuming. It's amazing. And I, as someone who travels at a high velocity, I am more than slightly envious of being able to really work with a group of people and have it be consistent and build upon that seed structure rather than a cross-pollination structure, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll address that. Yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot of international NGO work, consulting and all that. And yeah, I mean, I kind of went back to my roots as a community organizer, which is what my training is in, or whatever. My sort of first work experience, I used to organize Latino immigrant communities here in the U.S., where I'm from, in Philly.
That's where I'm from, too.
Which sides?
Yeah.
which areas?
I'm from right actually in Center City.
I'm a little out in the suburbs up in Montgomery County.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
I don't think we would be able to do what we do if there wasn't really basic trust that we're not going to go away. Just on that level. And like, we are in it for the long haul. Mm-hmm. If anyone gonna go to jail, we'll be there, you know, and likewise, like literally to that level. And that's trust that gets built over time. It gets built through actions, not just through words. So, yeah, I mean.
That's what fascinates me about having these two panels back to back and these four, unfortunately for right now, three amazing people in this room, is that you had two different like backgrounds, and I guess initially you would think two different types of needs, but there's probably a lot of crossover. And coming to the same, like, type of idea that we need an open telephone, cellular network system. Mm-hmm. My question to all three of you is, why do you think? Because I've noticed this trend of there's a lot more talk, just within the last year alone, of open cellular networks. Why do you think that's like become an interest in a possible viable thing, like even in America?
I think one of the things is. Is cost. The cost of setting up one of these and the technology behind that cost is a lot more accessible. And so whereas, you know, 5 years ago, it would have one of these base stations that is sort of the brains behind the cellular network would be, you know, $5,000-$6,000. Now they're coming in at the, you know, $500-$600 range. And so it makes it much more cost effective. And more people can get their hands on a box and play with it and understand how the technology works. And it's something that I think, you know, we both mentioned, you know, the Fairwinds, out of Moscow. Mm-hmm. I always want to say Fairview, but
that's one of my other
customers. You know, they have some really good equipment that they've designed and built on open source technology, and have, you know, it's very accessible, and I think that's probably one of the barriers to entry a few years ago was, you know, the cost and it's harder to access this technology.
I think there's also a much deeper desire now. People place a lot of trust in the systems that they are a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And we've definitely realized that we have been trusting the wrong people, and maybe it's worth the scant amount of effort, which is also incredibly rewarding, in order to be aware of and participatory in the systems of which we are a part.
Right.
And so, and also just seeing that it's possible, not just at a large scale for a short amount of time,
right,
or at a hyper-local, deeply embedded, long-term engagement, that both of those are possible mean that we can do this for ourselves. And also, the math behind mesh networks sucks at scale, and so we might as well do cell phone.
Yes, yeah, cell phone. Instead. Because like the infrastructure is somewhere over there. It's funny because right before, because I'm going to ask Peter a specific question, that when you initially said cost, I found this weird dichotomy of like sort of the cost with our current cellular overlords and how much they are trying to tax their own users and milk them, which is ironic because it's almost like we've come full circle from the 90s when calling long distance was really expensive, which gave birth to all the red boxing that happened.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, it's like almost like they sort of kind of solved that problem and then they're like back to square one with a different problem. Kind of use the quote from Lost Worlds, we're not doing the same mistake again. No, we're just making all new ones.
Yeah, and you know, as the commercial cellular providers see people moving from, you know, traditional SMS and voice over to VoIP, you know, now they're getting rid of the unlimited data plans and all that stuff. So it's they're smart. They're capitalists, so they're gonna follow the money as quickly as the money moves.
Well, kind of, because if I remember correctly, a lot of the reasons why they wanted to switch over to a digital system was they were sick and tired of trying to patch in physically and remotely all the different sort of operating systems you could screw around with on analog. Mm-hmm. And what was ironic is that, yeah, while moving it over, they have more control. We've kind of opened to the point where if you know how to do computing hacking, you can now freak. So it caused a huge bunch of more problems. But just going back to Peter, here's something that I'm very curious about, because unfortunately there was chunks that I missed, so I don't know if this question came up. I'm curious. As you said, there's a lot of politics in doing this, and sometimes you get adverse reactions in surprise areas that you never thought were possible, not just with dealing with the data usage and setting up the stuff, but from the people there. What I'm curious is, how much resistance is there between, like a ratio between the local population not sort of getting the idea, accepting the idea, and like the cellular overlords being mad that this idea is kind of possible and you might be like undermining them exploiting another country that they stupidly assume thinks doesn't know any better?
I don't know if I can give it to you as a ratio, but one.
I mean, yeah. Your experience in this, yes.
So I answered, like I said, that we're kind of like the A-team. We don't work anywhere that we haven't been explicitly invited. And what that nice. Actually means is people have to show us the minutes of their community assembly where they made a decision by consensus to allow us to come and enter their community. And until we have that piece of paper, we don't really take it seriously. In other words, we don't take a community seriously, and we do that to protect ourselves and to protect the local people themselves, to say, look, we're not going to go step in somewhere where there's too much other stuff going on, nor do we sort of pretend to be able to come and resolve that. Like, I've been doing this kind of stuff long enough that I'm not interested in like getting into people's local political battles at that level.
You're just there to help, and you want to help the people that
want
to be helped.
Or it's just like, let's not make things worse. Like, if there's a community conflict, let's not make it worse.
Right.
If there's not a community conflict and people can come to a consensus, we're happy to help. There hasn't really been any blowback from the major operators. What they've done, since they're like sly, conniving bastards, is they basically follow us around.
Mm.
We kind of like, we were really strategic.
Like physically?
Yeah, physically. Well, they physically come and install networks after we've installed the network. Mm. And they do it, and they corrupt local politicians to do it. Mm-hmm. They corrupt local people to do it. It's very similar to how these types of companies operate generally, and not just in telecom, other.
They're essentially doing the same dirty tricks they did 70 years ago in America, like, now.
Right. So imagine a community that for 10 years was, you know, I can show you the letters somehow, we can upload them, whatever. You know, pages and pages of signatures, stamps, all this stuff saying, please come and install a freaking network in our community.
Right.
And nobody ever came. And so now all of a sudden they're showing up and saying, this actually seems like a good business opportunity. Mm-hmm. Based on what we've been able to do and based on some sort of like local people who have been corrupted or are corrupt themselves or however you are, you know, trying to make money.
Right.
Saying, oh, wow, this community actually is ready for cellular. Like, they'll put out a bunch of money up. So what we hope, one, like, that for me is great. Like, come on, show up, install infrastructure. That's your job.
Right.
Like, way to do your job.
Yeah.
Like, congratulations. However, we're always going to be cheaper than you.
Right.
Always. Like, you are never going to be as cheap as us because you are motivated by profit and we are not. Therefore.
and because of that, you're also asking the people there what they want instead of just, here's our thing, you must have this.
Like, I'll give you an example. So one of the operators came in, installed network, and said, look, you have unlimited calling, you know, on network, not just in the village, but on the whole, our whole huge number. Caveat, you need to pay 10 times what you pay to use our network to unlock that service.
Just to unlock it.
Yeah, you have to pay 200 pesos just to have the right to talk on network for free. Whereas in our network, it's just part of the deal, right? So we're trying to take these guys out, like, not on price only, but on quality and on extra service. Like, there's no reason we can't provide a better service.
Right.
Because frankly, these organizations, they're really large. They have lots and lots of money.
Right.
But they're not very creative. And they're also, in some ways, more, you know, like, they have to make money.
Right.
So having that, it's actually a burden.
Yeah, I know.
In some ways, for them to do interesting and cool stuff.
I imagine when you guys move in and then they move in immediately after, it's sort of like this, like, weird congratulation, but also backhand, because it's like, oh, so originally you guys thought this place was a waste of time, and then when we move in and it's working, now all of a sudden you want to come in and do all this stuff in enterprise. Where the hell were you guys when people were begging for this, you know?
But, like, we claim it as a victory.
Right.
We're like, great, you came. Yeah, and you came because we built this thing.
Johnny, and you want to comment on this? Like, you or Willow?
We've seen similar things with the installation of water points, where a community will pull their resources, they'll figure it out on their own, they'll do it, and then the municipality that's supposed to handle this comes in and you're like, oh, you can do this. All right, we'll we're gonna build this one over here. And
yeah, here's some more.
Great. It's wonderful to have more of it.
Right.
One of the things that I love about Tarifa that I didn't bring up during our talk is that in deploying in Tanzania, we got support from the Ministry of Water because in my too short time there, there's definitely a deferment to authority and people didn't want to self-organize because when they have in the past, there's this disruption that happens. Any resources that they put in either break and then they aren't allowed to fix it on their own or whatever else.
Right.
Like, they're disempowered repeatedly.
Like, they're essentially punished if they try to do anything on their own.
Right. And so we did end up partnering with the Ministry of Water because then we're able to hold them accountable because they're allowing us to by saying, hey, this thing is broken and you're not coming and fixing it. But the thing that I love about it is that it's not just the water engineers who work with the ministry who get the updates of something being broken. Okay. It's anyone who is, like, anyone can send an update that says this is fixed.
Really?
And so it just, without even, it's not even a thing. It's not even a deal. It's just in the code that anyone can take care of their own infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when we have those conversations with the communities and not with the municipality, you're like, hey, and you can fix your own thing and it's fine. Which is, and then we all know that it's fixed. Okay, cool. And it's,
no middleman. Awesome.
You don't have to wait 4 months. Mm-hmm. You can just do it.
So to kind of ask a question between all three, like I said, everyone's right now using the open cellular network system. How similar or different, like, which similarities and differences you would say between your setups, in the various areas in Mexico, in rural Mexico, versus you guys setting up in other areas and also Black Rock City?
I think that the basic functionality of all of them is going to be similar. I mean, there's going to be nuances in the underlying software and how easily it's configured and the actual hardware and but I think that you're going to see, you know, similar either 2G or 3G cell phone servers and SMS capabilities in all of these platforms, and that's basically what, you know, the Range Networks platform that we used, which is based on OpenBTS, and Fairwinds, which I'm not sure.
Fairwaves.
I don't know. I know that I'm not sure what their underlying BTS software is.
So there's two main open source GSM stacks.
Right.
One is OpenBTS and one is OpenBSC.
Right.
So we actually used OpenBTS first, found that it didn't work as we had hoped.
What was the disadvantage you guys ran into, the bottleneck?
It just wasn't stable enough.
Okay.
Like, the main field testing had actually been at Burning Man. I don't want to get too much into this, but the main field testing had been at Burning Man, but with a lot of engineers around it sort of keep propping it up.
Right.
Whereas when we wanted to install it in community, we really wanted it to
place it and to it not crash every unless 5 something minutes. Really bad happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was crashing a lot, and we worked very closely with OpenBTS folks to try to get it up to snuff. We weren't able to do that. That experience has turned into OpenBTS 4.0, which apparently is much better. Mm. But we moved over to the other project, which is OpenBSC, and have been developing all of our stuff on that platform, which we sort of did a simultaneous install using Fairwave's equipment. We also work with another vendor called Nutac, who build lots and lots and lots of BTSs and deploy them all over the world, and integrated OpenBSC sort of into their into their hardware. So we use a different one, but like Johnny said, you know, the end game or whatever is, you know, basic voice and SMS, moving into GPRS and internet, and then added, you know, quote unquote value added services, whatever those are.
I probably shouldn't say this on air, but I'm going to wing it that I know that you need to go somewhere eventually, Pete, so just let me know and I'll be able to load up the last question because I already have that in queue. Did you want to say something real quick?
Along those same lines, I know that there's been some disruption internally in the OpenBTS group. And one of the original writers of that has moved on and now has launched Yate BTS, which is still based on the original stack, but but echoes, you know, your experience.
I mean, the great thing about this is that it's open. I mean, you know, there can be a million of these.
Yes.
It's great.
Yeah.
And OpenBSC, you know, the transceiver layer is based on the
OpenBTS.
Anyway, the point is, the more approaches, the better. You know, obviously, we want to hopefully funnel people into only a couple of things so that we can actually build things that work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, the more the merrier, kind of.
Cool. I'll just go to the Mia question because I had something else. I'm going to boop. What sort of social changes has anyone seen with the groups that you are providing the service to, good or bad, since you've started these open cellular networks?
Sexting.
Well, yeah, you said there's a lot of teenagers.
Yeah, I mean, it's none of my business, so
social
what do I care?
Right.
No, but it's funny, yeah. Is
there now you know how the NSA feels.
No, these are, you know, these are things that people grapple with, especially in sort of quote-unquote traditional communities, was like, what's going to happen when all of a sudden... In fact, we actually were invited by a community way, way in the jungle in Ecuador to come and work with them. It's part of a much larger project that they're doing. And, you know, we showed up and talked to them, and they're like, actually, we don't want to do this. And I was like, great. They were like, we don't want to, like, open this Pandora's box. Can you install, you know, telephones in our house? We're like, yeah, sure. Like, that's really easy. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, you get that type of stuff happening. You know, we've seen, I mean, I could really go on about this for a long time. This is, like, what I really find interesting. We do find a lot of, I talk about something called territorial reconfiguration. So basically the way that people actually interact with their with their environment
morphs around the
changes.
The services,
so for example, where we work, the communal land where people do the farming, where they, you know, where they produce their living from, is usually quite far away, 2 hours away, an hour away.
Yeah.
But now they have coverage there. So folks can go and work and not be worried that they're totally isolated. So one guy the other day was bitten by a snake. A poisonous, you know, he was like, I'm going to die, and was able to call back to the village and say, hey, come and get me, and they came and got him, and he didn't die.
Awesome.
The doctor in that town can now talk to the clinic in the other town to diagnose patients. You know, I mean, it's like all this really basic stuff around having a telephone that I don't think is really particular to what we're doing. We can build onto that and do really cool stuff on top of it. So one thing we're thinking about doing, we work with coffee producers. That's the region where we are.
Right.
You know, send people, scrape from the internet, send people the coffee price, and then they can negotiate with the people that come and buy, the sort of intermediaries that come and buy.
So you're sort of doing more communication between the classes. That's
Just they can say, look, you know, you want to pay me this, but here's the international price according to my text message. So give me more money.
Right. And what are the burners? Have you seen any changes?
Several years ago, one of the original co-founders of Burning Man sort of
went crazy.
He publicly said that he didn't like this and it shouldn't be part of the community. And,
right.
And, you know, cell phones have no place on the playa. Right. That's basically what he said.
Mm-hmm.
He's entitled to his opinion. They didn't ban us from going. I mean, one of the tenets of Burning Man is radical inclusion.
Right.
And so this was the project that, you know, our camp decided that we wanted to do. We're a bunch of telephony geeks. And,
right.
And, okay. And that, and that was, you know, that was our choice. That was the project that our camp chose to work on. And I've seen over time attitudes start to change, right. Especially even within the Burning Man organization themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, the Gate and Exodus team asked us to actually write an app for them.
Oh, wow.
So that was like the first time that we actually had participation.
Quick question, what was the app's function they asked you to do?
The app's function was to the people at the gate could update what the current wait time was to leave Burning Man.
Oh,
so you've got,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like you got 70,000 people getting in their cars and leaving at the same time. Mm-hmm. Within a, you know, 24-48 hour period.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. So a lot of times the wait time to get out the single road that could be 6 hours that you're just sitting in a line waiting to get mm-hmm. out, whereas you could spend, you know, 4 of those hours still sitting in your camp or helping clean up.
Right.
And if you wait 4 hours, then your exit time is only an hour.
Right.
And so this is the thing that makes me so happy about what Peter does and the conversations that he has with people is this actually what you want? And then setting community guidelines based upon what the technology can enable.
Right.
In that what upsets me, who participated in this, about having cell phone coverage at Burning Man is that now there's less freedom. It used to be, you used to be able to ride your bike naked.
Yeah.
And not be, like, there would be some people who would bring in a camera or something, but if you saw someone with a technological device out, you knew that they were up to something.
Right.
And now people carry around their phones just like they always do. It's like how we feel about Google Glass now.
Right.
But on the playa. And so I like it for things like Exodus because it's what do we need that technology and communications infrastructure will allow us to do better in a way that uplifts the entire community.
Right.
Like we're able to stick around for longer and clean up and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the traps that we have fallen into based on the walled gardens of Facebook and whatever else, where it
right.
encourages this sort of communication where you're just sending email because
the
you're
social,
supposed to
anti-social.
Reply to it rather than actually considering what needs right. to be said and right. saying it then.
Right. So just because Peter's going to have to go, I don't know if you two want to stick around for just a couple more minutes after, or do we all want to end it at the same time?
Yeah. I want to go drink gin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will say the final question here because really I could spend like all day with you guys. This is awesome. I wish we had more time for this.
We might be able to join you tomorrow or some at some point.
Cool. Well, we'll see. We have like a lot of scheduling stuff, but I will try to make a. I'll look at it. The last question for everyone is just. Where in your respective technological and social changes, like your best scenario, where do you want to take this? Like, what's your next level with the work you guys are all doing, starting with Peter?
Thousands of networks. yeah, we want to cover everybody, you know, that wants us, that'll have us. We're really far away from being able to do that, mainly because of money. So we kind of go at a snail's pace, not just because of money, but also because of all the like community stuff. Mm-hmm. Can be very slow. So you kind of have to like be really zen about that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to start with Mexico. We're already actually talking to not only communities, but also governments in other countries. And just uncover.
I'm sure after the talk, as I saw people bring in hardware and stuff to look at, that might not be too far away as you think. Johnny and Willow, where would you like to take your next zenith?
I think that taking that same concept into Africa is going to be
yes.
huge.
Yes.
There is such a demand and need for cellular coverage all over the
right.
place, from everything for the Tarifa project, which, you know...
They're actually pretty well covered in a lot of places.
I personally found, I used to live in Nigeria, yeah. that Africa is like really well covered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not, I mean, not everywhere, but it's not bad. But yes, I mean, the point is taken for sure. Yeah.
So.
Kind of killed your dream there.
There's plenty of.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of emergency uses and social
media. Plenty of places that aren't covered, too.
Yep.
I want people to be able to communicate directly to each other in an interest of mutual aid and self-organization in a way that is not mediated and influenced by the baggage that we have built up in our institutions.
Right.
I think
because Burning Man is supposed to be to get away from all that, and we should be doing that in general.
Burning Man has all sorts of its own baggage.
That's true.
But I think that it is possible to get part of the way there during the very limited lifespans that we all have.
If I could just add to that, not to go any further, but this is a question of freedom, right?
Like
freedom to communicate, freedom to not be spied upon,
right.
Freedom to pay a reasonable amount of money for
choice.
Yeah, no. And when I said thousands of networks, it's not, you know, we're not megalomaniacs or anything, but it looks different when you have 5 communities than when you have 5,000 communities.
Right.
You're doing something different. And if you can have those 5,000 communities not being spied on, people, you know what I mean? It begins to be a real social, something changes in a much sort of larger scale. And that's why that's what our goal is, you know.
Well, that's awesome.
It looks more interesting.
Excited to see where all of this develops on both fronts. I think you guys have very interesting stuff. And before we go, if people want to know more about the projects you're working on, where can they contact you guys or check you guys out at?
For Geeks Without Bounds, it's gwob.org. As in Geeks Without Bounds.
Gwob.org.
We do a pretty good job of keeping our blog up to date. Willow and her team and Alicia
and Lindsay
do a great job of sort of keeping up. They do weekly check-ins with all the projects that we're working on. And they do Google Hangouts, and there's always new content. And right now we're actually are we still accepting applications, or are we done?
We are. We should mention that.
Yes.
Real quick.
We should have mentioned that.
Just gwob.org/apply if you want to be a part of the 6 months of mentorship.
Awesome. So we have an accelerator that we help humanitarian projects go through like a 6 month mentorship process. So if you've got a tech project, you have an idea that you think we should take a look at, you can visit the website and apply to be part of the next set of teams, which is we're getting ready to
awesome mechanize the army for the future. And you, Peter?
We have a website. It's nothing fancy. It's rhizomatica.org with an H, so rhizomatica.org, and on Twitter at rhizomatica.
Awesome. Well, this has been my favorite talk. I wish we could have 6 hours on this, but that's all the time we have. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Peter. And
thank you,
Johnny. And thank you, Willow, for coming out to hear. We have some more music. We might have more talks, but either way, things are always interesting on Radio Stettler. Stay tuned.